Hello and welcome to another AST podcast. We held a virtual event ahead of the game at Old Trafford, so we thought we'll make it into a podcast. In this particular part, we have Henry Winter, former chief football writer for The Times, join us, and we'll discuss what's been going on in Henry's life from a personal and professional perspective, along with the discussion on the wider football. Enjoy. And here we have Henry Winter joining us. Henry, how are you?
I'm very good. I'm in sunny Glasgow.
It is probably quite sunny, actually.
It's glorious. Yeah, it's absolutely glorious. In fact, the last time I was in this hotel, I bumped into Charlie Nicholas, who was looking very well.
So there you go. You're obviously covering the old firm for the week.
I'm covering the old firm. So I've been wandering around going to Glaswegian bars, all in the interest of research.
Talk about beer. I have got a special 49 lager here, which is great from Camden House. But Henry, want to start with obviously you. Obviously, there was a little bit of news, personal news. You parted ways with the Times.
Well, I think they parted way with me. I think it's to be more honest about it.
I was trying to be polite, but they parted. Well, whatever, they've been parted ways. But I mean, one, what are you going to do now? But two, is journalism changing a little bit as well? I know we talked off air and I said we had Rob Draper on and Nick Harris on recently, all in a similar boat where they've sort of gone it themselves sort of thing after being made redundant at various kind of newspapers. What's your thoughts?
Well, I'm very happy with the situation because I had two books lined up. I'm going to the Euros, doing it for other people. The industries, this is nothing new. This has been sort of splintering in a way, away from the sort of the legacies, a bit patronizing, but the sort of the old mainstream, Goliaths. And so I've got a YouTube channel. I'm on Substack. Substack I find fascinating because if you look at the American model, the baseball writers, a lot of the baseball writers, or some of the major ones, are leaving the sort of, the bigger institutions and setting themselves up on their own. And they've got huge followings. And then I assume that they're doing quite well financially. I mean, I'm doing it because I like getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and writing about Jude Bellingham or writing about Declan Rice. And, all those issues. And I file it at 9 o'clock and then crack on with sort of books and radio and whatever. So absolutely. I mean, you guys have been in the forefront of this, Zoom. All these sort of meetings. So, when I started out in, 85, 86, and was just sort of knocking on someone's door opposite Ewood Park, asking to use their phone and then filing something which no one would read for sort of 16 hours, those days are gone. It's immediacy, it's technology, and it's a range of platforms.
Obviously, the last time I saw you was I think it was your final day at the Times. It was the home leg, wasn't it? Was it Munich home leg?
Yeah, it was.
So how does accreditation and stuff work? Will you still be in the Arsenal press box sometimes? Will people still see you around?
Yeah, you're not going to get rid of me that quickly. absolutely. I'm carrying on going to games. Do you know what? The clubs, all 20 clubs, have been absolutely brilliant. I mean, I could spend the next month just going and going and watching games, but I love writing about games. And also you want to keep an element of independence and being able to sort of criticize, because there's what it's like, there's so many issues. I mean, you guys are at the forefront of it, of actually keeping the business the sport safe, because of what you did over the Super League, what you're doing over ticket prices. And it's great to see clubs, tribal fan bases linking up, uniting on this. I know Spirit of Shankly have been doing things. Tottenham, obviously, they've been proactive because of the issues they've had with ticketing. The ticketing is a huge issue. It's a huge issue every year, ticket prices, season ticket prices. But particularly now with the cost of living, and particularly now when you go to games and you just see it's brilliant when you have people coming in from abroad, but you cannot forget, you cannot ignore, you cannot disenfranchise the kids from the Holloway Road.
Well, Henry, it's really interesting what you're saying about how you're going to carry on, and we're really pleased that you will, because you do write about all of football's issues, including what we as fans experience. And I thought it was a great testament to you. I think you were holding the Sports Writers Football Writer Award and the FSA, the Fans Award, at the same time. And the fact in many ways you can hold the establishment title and then the fans title at the same time, but does show that you managed to cover all of the game's issues in a way that everybody felt was fair and inclusive and insightful. And it's, we're so pleased you came on tonight, but we hope we'll stay friends and in touch with you. And you'll keep profiling our issues because we need the help to raise the voice of the fans.
Yeah, I mean, just because I'm a posh twat from Highgate doesn't mean I'm not sort of aware of all the issues that are going on. You know, I've got kids who go to matches and they keep me very aware of the issues. And also, we have an issue in this country with ownership. And I've been critical of some, you know, there are some good owners. But we really have to, you know, it is the duty of, you know, particularly someone my age, to make sure the sport, which I love and has just looked after me, but just that I love so much, that we pass it on properly to the next generation. And that sort of sounds a bit grandiose, but it's, you know, there are so many issues, you know, messing around with kickoff times. You know, I travel around on the trains a lot and I get the last train out of King's Cross when going back to the Midlands, the 2333, which is known as the Vomit Comet. And, you know, when games are delayed, I mean, even little things like VAR is making people miss trains. So look, there's so many issues, but, you know, you lot are leading the way, you know.
Yeah, and
you know, you and a little things like, so I, you know, go up to Anfield a lot. You will know the people who are involved in the food bank outside Anfield, you know, so Dave Kelly, the Everton fan, and obviously Ian Doyle, who's now the MP. It's so important what you do for football and also for society as well.
Well, we were, you know, just hot off the press telling all of our members that we've been invited by the Parliamentary Committee looking at the Football Governance Bill that will introduce the independent regulator to give evidence in person last week. And partly we get that platform because people like yourselves and others will write about us and press the issue. And of course, we put forward our own evidence. One of the things I will represent the AST at that session next week, one of the things we're going to particularly lead on, I think you wrote about this in one of your early Substack columns, is about the threat of the owners taking Arsenal home games or Premier League home games overseas. You know, how much of that is a threat and how much do we need to fight it?
100% a threat. Having talked to owners, having talked to finance people, having talked to someone in California last week, and he was basically saying, who knows a few of the American owners. And he was saying, it absolutely is a threat. I mean, he didn't see it as a threat. He saw it as a way of owners making money. And, you know, there's a lot of, it's particularly topical with PSR. So their argument is that if we're going to meet PSR, if we are going to be, as you are campaigning for, more measured on ticket prices, then we need to take games to Miami, to New York, to Boston, to LA. 75,000 people, $300 a head. The rights for Premier League football will inflate. Everyone sees that as a win-win. My argument is on many levels. First, we all know people who go home and away. Some of them, you know, they're sort of the Maria syndrome. Dear lovely Maria, who will get, and they're, you know, they're Marias at every club who go home and away, reserves, win and gain, and they, you know. Why should they have their run broken? Because someone has picked up their home game. And remember, I don't think it's going to be a mid-table game. You know, if you're an American owner, you want Arsenal versus Liverpool, Arsenal versus Manchester United, Manchester United versus Liverpool. And my issue on many levels, first, you can talk about climate. You can talk about absolutely fans' rights. You're taking it away. But the only way I think it might actually sort of dissuade them, if you say you have the most respected sporting competition in the world. People have a go at referees, but they're not bent. They're not corrupt. They might make human errors. It's a very, what I call a very honest league. But the moment you start messing around with the sporting integrity of the competition, which effectively you are doing by saying, if you have one of your 19 home games taken away, a big game, and you then go and lose that, and there are other people who you're challenging for the title, they don't have a home game taken away, then what does that say about the sporting integrity of the league? So on those sort of principles, as well as financial, as well as supporters, as well as climate, as well as player welfare, I think you guys have got to rise up against this, but it's a very, very real threat. And whenever I look at teams getting promoted from the championship, I think, how many American owners are coming in?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that's very interesting development, you know, maybe it's one of the few good things coming out of the system at the moment, is the Premier League looking at this anchoring idea, or the idea that a club can only spend so much more than a bottom club. Where that might work, Henry, is at the moment they talk about PSR, they need about needing more money to compete. But if there's sort of like a cap, or if there's some control on it, then there's no longer, they can no longer say, well, we need to put your ticket prices up by 5% next year, which is what Arsenal have done on average, because we're trying to compete with everybody else. If there's some form of anchoring, if there's some sort of control, it could help here. I'm an advocate for saying next year, loads of money is flowing into the Premier League commercially. Every club should freeze ticket prices. But if you could get all of them to do it because they felt they were losing out competitively, it might work.
It's a really good point. And also, when you look at the ticket pricing, when they sort of increase them, how much are they actually making, which then compares to how much they're forking out on agents' fees, how much they're generating coming in. They're not exactly making, you know, tens of millions of pounds by hiking it. And then it's a PR own goal.
It's about 20% of Arsenal's revenue. So what hits an individual fan quite hard is very marginal to the club's overall income. And then you get, and you know, here's me plugging to all of our members again who haven't filled in the survey already, but then you get Arsenal trying to save £25,000 by abolishing the senior citizen concession in the family enclosure.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's crazy. And I've long had this issue with 18 to 24, because, again, it comes back to one of the reasons why people pay a lot of money for rights around the world is the atmosphere. I mean, you know, you would have every right to charge the Premier League because of the atmosphere that you generate. You are the only ones who are part of the show, in inverted commas, who actually doesn't make money out of it. The owners, well, some of the owners make money out of it. The players certainly make money out of it. The managers certainly make money out of it. And so the fans who provide this amazing backdrop, you know, you should actually be rewarded. And the way you should be rewarded is with more sensible ticket prices. But what I like is the fact that almost German style, there's more of a collectivity, and it's because of trusts like you and others that you're uniting against this. Because I don't think it'll be the media that stops another European Super League, a 39th game, or games going overseas. It will be fans. It will be you turning on sponsors. It will be you turning on your owners.
One final question I have on the governance.
On that point, though, I obviously went to America last year on a family holiday, but coincided with the tour and went to the games in Washington and New York. And you know, they were full. Like, we played Arsenal Man United in New York or just outside New Jersey, MetLife Stadium. Absolutely packed, very expensive ticket pricing. You know, the demand is definitely there. But I remember speaking to a couple of American fans on the way back in a sort of coach, and all of them said it was good to be there, but it was nothing like watching a real game, even on TV, because even they recognised that the atmosphere wasn't quite... It was a friendly, but it wasn't there. They said that there is so much, because a few of them come to London a couple of times a year, and they said they would definitely rather come to London and watch Arsenal at the Emirates than watch them in New York, just because it feels like it means something. So it's just, I can see why owners want to do it, because it was a packed stadium, but yeah, just not sure it kind of works.
If I extend that, Henry, it's a sort of final question I had on governance before we put you on the line about where the title's going to end up, is it feels like the game is at a real crisis point now with player welfare and the workload. And we see Infantino trying to make his club World Cup bigger. We see the Euros are going to be bigger. Next year, the FA Cup has had to lose its replays because of the expanded Champions League. But you actually meet the players behind the scenes and talk to people in the game. I mean, is this a game where players are running on empty and we're at kind of danger levels of health and fitness before we start getting into the appropriateness of fans having to follow this number of competitions?
Well, Rodri played, what, 70 games last season. Phil Foden could play 66, 67 games this season. So I think we'll see. If England run out of steam in the quarterfinals and semifinals of the Euros, everyone will say, well, it's because of the intensity of the Premier League, albeit two of our major players, the 9 and the 10, play overseas. So, yeah, I think it absolutely is an issue. But I think I think if the players are going to argue that, and this is a debate I have with the PFA, is that if the players are going to argue that on welfare, then make wages more performance related. I think a lot of the problems in this country arise from the inflated player wages. I just think that what is the difference between 400,000 a year and 300,000 a year? This is a crazy thing. You know, 400,000 a week, 300,000 a week. They would accept 300,000 a week. I think if the owners had been stronger and had almost a sort of soft salary cap, which they actually imposed themselves as an agreement, there might be antitrust elements of that. I don't know. But I think if they'd been a little bit more sensible on that, and then obviously there would be more support for their complaints about sort of overplaying. But you know what? It varies from club to club. You know, I've been at Chelsea and they've got 10 players injured and they really just can't work out why that is. Arsenal, I think you've just got, well, Jurrien Timber's back now. I mean, it's, you know, huge credit to, you know, your medical and sports conditioning people. Manchester United have got a crisis. So there's, in a way, it's slightly inconsistent because some have got 10 out and then some have only got one out. So it's, I know the PFA are studying it at the moment and they are literally looking into things like, do VAR delays contribute to the possibility of soft tissue injuries later in the game, particularly in a cold winter? You've got players hanging around for sort of almost for 4 or 5 minutes and then sprinting. And then I can see if it carries on like this with VAR, it's that players will actually go over to the touchline and go on sort of watt bikes or whatever, just to keep themselves ticking over. That's a slight extreme example, but the PFA are certainly looking into it with these injuries. I mean, at one point in the season, there were 100 players out of action, which is what, a fifth of all Premier League squads. And that's wrong. You want to see the big players. Going into individuals, Cole Palmer looks like he's carrying either a hamstring or thigh injury, looking at the strapping he had on the other day. Bukayo Saka just gets kicked all the time, but just keeps getting up again. I know the club have twice talked to PGMO about the treatment of Saka. And I think Southgate should be stronger on these things. I think he should just say, listen, we've got some fabulous players. Let's not have them kicked a bit. So, look, it's a balance there. But I think if you reduce the wages or made them more performance related, I think that maybe there would be a little bit more sympathy towards the players.
Henry, as kind of Tim said, you know, we've had you on the sort of trust a lot and you often write about fan issues. And I mean, you even joined us for lunch. Was it in Porto? Wasn't
yeah,
it?
That was lovely. I think that was my last nice meal.
So, you know, and obviously you were interested in what everyone thought and stuff, which was great. One thing where you did divide a little bit of opinion in the Arsenal camp was very recently when you voted in the PFA Players Writers Year Award.
FWA. I don't think the PFA was...
FWA, sorry.
Yeah, having seen my limited centre-half skills.
I mean, two things on that. One is obviously the timing of the vote, your thoughts. And obviously, two is, you know, the Arsenal fans that were questioning why you went Phil Foden and not Declan Rice or Martin Odegaard. What's your sort of response?
Well, Phil Foden is just phenomenal. I mean, he's just, if you talk to players past and present, they just sort of purr about him. I just think he can play any position. He's got, what, 5 titles by the age of 23. I think when Kevin De Bruyne is not playing, Phil Foden, I don't need to tell you this, you know what a good player he is. I agree with you completely on the timing. And if Declan Rice goes on to win the title, Arsenal go on to win the title, then Declan Rice, for me, will be Footballer of the Year. But it's just this timing. They have to book the Village Hall or whatever, book the hotel in London, get all the logistics sorted out. You know, I think it is an issue, but we're stuck with it. I mean, I vote on the Ballon d'Or as well, and I do often look at players who won something in the year. Messi was a classic case in the voting for the previous year. So, I mean, I do, but Foden's already won something. But I don't know. It is. I will look a bit stupid if Declan Rice just storms the next few games and, you know, gets his hands on the Premier League trophy. I will also be one of the most delighted people around, because Declan Rice, I'm sure you guys have met him, he is just brilliant. I mean, he's brilliant with the press. He's brilliant with the fans. His teammates love him. And he's been slightly helped in recent weeks with Thomas Partey coming in, and we're seeing more of the expansive side of Declan Rice. But I tell you what, they are, I'd vote for him as nicest guy in football.
And what are your thoughts on sort of the English lads that will certainly go to the Euro? So we'll have Declan and Bukayo Saka probably starting for England. Aaron Ramsdale will probably go as a number two despite not playing much. What are your sort of thoughts on all three and their kind of season and their summer ahead?
Saka starts. I mean, that's because Southgate's loyal and he likes a bit of pace out wide. I think Saka, we've seen how he's developed this season. He's going inside and out. I think it's a pity that Ben White's chosen not to play for England, because even though Kyle Walker's the, you know, the best right back in the world and would start, I just think that White Saka understanding would have been something that could have played a part for England at some point during the game. Ben White's had an absolute magnificent season, and that's maybe because he's not thinking about England. He's just focusing on what brilliant work he can do for Arsenal. Ramsdale, I've always thought, was England's number two. I mean, people are saying, oh, Sam Johnson, sadly injured, is England's number two. But for me, it was always Ramsdale. There is a gap between him and Pickford, certainly in Southgate's eyes. Southgate, you know, loves Pickford. Pickford's never let England down. He'll probably also take a penalty. But Ramsdale goes as well. I don't think there's any dispute about that. Saka, you just hope he gets a good week, a good 10 days off, because he does get kicked. And you look at these games and you think, you know, and ultimately, if players are going to keep getting kicked, they're going to stay down longer to get the opponent booked. They're going to dive more. They're going to preempt challenges that are coming in. And yeah, I just think Bukayo Saka is getting punished twofold. First, physically, and also by being honest, because he just jumps back up.
Mm. Mm. And then just talking about the title race, we'll let you go in a few minutes, Henry. I know you've got to sort of
get... You'll let me go in 30 seconds when I answer your question on the title race.
I know you've got research to do in the pubs of Glasgow. I mean, I've heard all the excuses tonight. But what is going to happen in the title race?
I mean, we've had this conversation. I've been saying it. I thought City would win at the start of the season, which wasn't a sort of, you know, particularly brave prediction. I've been thinking since Christmas they'd win it by a point. But the one thing you can say is that it's been one of the best title races I've covered, I've seen. I think it's been fantastic. Even when it went from 3-2 with Liverpool slipping out of it, Arsenal, the way they responded, the resilience has just been just fantastic. We've had our debates about Kai Havertz, but I mean, even I would acknowledge, even though I still think you need number nine, Havertz, I think, has been sort of outstanding the last month. In this crunch time of the season, as we saw with Fergie's teams, as we've seen with Pep Guardiola's team, when those sort of teams have a sort of muscle memory hitting the final furlong, I think Arsenal are being fantastic. Another reminder of how much Arsenal missed Saliba last season, because I think Saliba's just been sensational. Gabriel, the goalkeeper has been terrific. Left back has been a sort of slightly sort of, you know, rotating element, and they're different types of players when they step in. But Declan Rice, Odegaard, I mean, you know, they've just been. Do you know what? They've all stood up and taken responsibility. No one has hidden. So, you know, absolutely full credit for that. And if they win it, I mean, if they finish ahead of Manchester City, they'll be absolutely worthy champions. As a journalist, I quite like a change of narrative. It's not City, City, City. But you know, City, for me, I mean, they just got that edge. And when you see Haaland coming back in and playing like that, you know, but you may well do it.
You never know. I think Tim's trying to say something, but he's on mute. You would think after 4 years of Zoom, you would have...
It's a good reminder. How do you see it, Henry, with Manchester City being under 115 charges? Do you think that tarnishes it in years to come? Or do you think we should just judge on what happens on the pitch? Also, if I give you a long run in here, what do you think about the fact that we've watched Everton and Forest? It's not great for football fans, is it, to have this kind of parallel debate of looking at league tables and wondering what points clubs won and have they won it fairly and so on?
The game should be decided in the 90 minutes, and it certainly should be decided in the season. I mean, just on City, they obviously deny all charges. They've got good lawyers. They obviously convinced they've got a fantastic case. Whenever you listen to Pep Guardiola, he's absolutely adamant. So, you know, you absolutely have to respect that. The one thing I would say on that is that it's just crazy leaving something so long, because even the delay is, I think, is embarrassing to the league. And I think for Manchester City fans, I'm sure they would rather have the whole thing clarified. And obviously they believe they are completely innocent. So that, you know, they will be able to, in a way, appreciate and cherish these titles, these moments even more, because people won't be able to have, oh, you know, have a sort of slight go at them. I think it's embarrassing for the league that it's effectively being not run by lawyers, but it's being influenced by lawyers. And they've got to get through these cases quicker. There's got to be more. It's a bit like VAR. There's got to be more consistency. There's got to be more transparency. We've got to remember that it is a sport, and just remember the game is about players and about supporters. It's not about lawyers, just like it's not about school teachers at Stockley Park.
If Arsenal win, Arsenal could well end up with 89 points this season, which I think, Akhil, is that the second best points total in Arsenal's history?
Yeah.
It really is an achievement, isn't it? Even if you, and it's very difficult to say, well, it's the second best team in Arsenal's history because 89 points, but Arsenal have had many teams that won the title before. But it's a phenomenal achievement what Mikel Arteta has done, and so quickly, to get them neck and neck with Manchester City.
Well, you know, I'm a huge Arteta fan. I have been from the start, all the sort of, you know, the trust the process. I think it's a great achievement on two counts. First, the fact that he is built and, you know, without sort of going crazy on the financial front. I mean, Declan Rice for 100 million. You know, with respect, look at Caicedo and Enzo Fernandez. I mean, Caicedo is coming back into form. Enzo's injured. But you know what? If 100 million is the benchmark, then Declan Rice is 130, 140 now. He's been outstanding on and off the pitch. Talk to the staff at Arsenal. They absolutely love him. So he's bought well. The club have bought well. And then the quality of the football. Do you enjoy going and watching this Arsenal team? Even if they do finish second, you will walk away going, I have been so entertained by Saka, by Odegaard. When Odegaard came in, I thought, he's a beautiful butterfly, but how much does he sting opponents? But I think Arsenal's been the making of him. I think he's absolutely blossomed because of Arteta, because of the love of the fans. And just what a captain he's proving. He's not a Frank McClintock, Tony Adams type, Captain Vieira type captain, but I just quite like the way he leads by example. And there was a lovely line in the Guardian, I think it was Barney Rone, who said, game 2 weeks ago, he said, it was like being, when Odegaard was sort of pressing, it was like being hounded to death by a poet, which was just a sort of lovely, lovely line, one of Barney's great lines. I like that. I like that class as well as that edge that he's got to him. So, yeah, so a joy to watch. And if they win it, if you win it, you'll be absolutely worthy champions.
Perfect. Well, on that note, Henry, we'll end. Thank you so much for your time. And enjoy the Old Firm derby on the weekend.
Yeah. Just before you go, Henry, are you going to be in Germany? Are we?
Yeah, 100%.
And should everyone signs up to your Substack, put in the newsletter update from this? Yeah. That's the best way. I've got it. The daily email comes in, and you are up early because it arrives early.
Everyone says that they want it for 9 o'clock, but and there'll be an announcement on what else I'm doing at some point.
Because you've got these books coming, but they're a secret at the moment, are they?
No, those are separate. I've got another announcement, sort of a bit more sort of focus, which is quite a fun thing. But you know what? I think those big jobs, the big football correspondent jobs, I don't know whether they've... It's changed. You look at how good The Athletic is, and then you look at the landscape's changed, but... You know, you just have to seize it. And whether it's doing radio, whether it's doing YouTube, whether it's doing Substack, whether it's doing podcasts, books, it's all about a message. And the ultimate thing is how unbelievably privileged we are to make our living from writing and covering and football, you know.
Well, it's really good that you're still around and still going to be giving us your messages. And we're we really hope that there'll be many more AST meetings that you can come to as well.
Yeah, and good luck next week with the meeting, because that is such an important meeting, because the message has to be got over to the Premier League. I think, in fairness, Richard Masters probably doesn't want those games abroad. He knows it's an absolute hand grenade thrown to him, and he knows the issues it would be. But, you know, the owners run the show. So good luck anyway.
Thank you.